Hi everyone, thank you for being here. My name is Michelle Hashimi and I am a DRPH student at the University of Texas School of Public Health and a graduate research assistant at the Michael and Susan Dell Center for Healthy Living. And today I'm going to be presenting on how to communicate with legislators about obesity prevention policy. So I will be sharing additional findings from the same study that Dr. Lee presented on earlier today. And before we get started, I'd like to thank my co-authors from the University of Texas School of Public Health, as well as Texas A&M School of Public Health. And a couple of them are in the audience today, Brooks Ballard and Heather Adderley. I have nothing to disclose. I would also like to thank our advisory committee and our project members, as well as our funder, the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. So to give some background about obesity in Texas, children in Texas have higher rates of obesity than many states in the U.S. and compared to the U.S. in general. As you can see in that graphic, almost a quarter of fourth graders were obese between the years of 2009 to 2011. So largely due to an effort of researchers, policymakers, to address the problem of obesity, many policies were passed between the years of 2001 to 2009 regarding physical activity, nutrition, and coordinated school health. However, there is a shift at the Capitol in 2011 when there's a 50% turnover in the legislators. So this raised the question, what concerns these new legislators and maybe what insight they might have to give to us on effective policy efforts. So that brings us to our survey, the 2013 Texas Health Perception Survey, where the purpose was to address the knowledge, attitudes, and perceptions about obesity prevention and control measures of legislators from the 83rd Texas Legislative Session. And the objective of my session today is going to be to present results on preferred communication methods and effective messaging based on interviews with those legislators. So we had a cross-sectional mixed methods design, and I'm going to be focusing on the qualitative portion of our study. We targeted legislators who were in various committees, such as public health, transportation, house appropriations, and public education, as well as any legislators who were in the farm-to-table caucus specifically, and also were happy to interview any legislators who were interested in being interviewed. So that brought us to target 30 legislators in total. After initial review of the data, a more in-depth analysis included reviewing responses to identify effective messengers and sources of information and the preferred channels, efforts, and formats and messengers of childhood obesity. So our interviews took place between January and August of 2013, and in total we had 16 legislative offices from Senate, House of Representatives, Republican, and Democratic offices. So, to get to our results, this was an unprompted question where we asked the legislators, what makes testimony effective? So we had a wide array of responses, and we grouped them into, right here, ideal source, ideal content, and some other details that came up in their responses. So as you can see, there's an overwhelming number that said somebody who's, for the testimony to be by somebody who's personally affected by the issue, and for the content to be their personal story. After that, there was expert and doctor, but the personally affected or stakeholder on the issue, somebody who's very familiar with the topic and who has experienced themselves, was the ideal source. They also mentioned for the testimony to be concise or short, and they also made some other notes, like it would be great if somebody could come to our office prior to presenting in session and for us to go over the testimony with them before they present it. And also they didn't like when there'd be the same testimony or the same message over and over again from different people in session. We asked legislators, how often do you seek research information when you're working on new policies? And this was also a very overwhelming response. On a scale of 1 to 5, with 5 meaning always seeks research information, the average score was 4.75. So we asked them, who would you turn to for a quick and reliable source for research information? And this was also an unprompted question. And you can see state and local agencies got the majority of the response. And then that was followed by advocacy groups, policy research groups, or foundations. And after that was universities. So typically large nonprofit entities. And some people did mention, like, they just look at Google. Like, so do we. Okay, so here we provided legislators with a list of different sources where they might go for research information. And here we show you the most reliable and the least reliable sources. So on the very left, you see that Texas universities, and as we are in Texas, was ranked as the most reliable source for research information. And the national government came right after that. Other universities fell more in the middle. And then on the other end of the scale, you can see that the media and industry were viewed as less reliable sources for research information. Here we ask the legislators on the importance of various data sources when they're deciding on legislation. So data from where is important to you when you're deciding. And we offered, you know, county, local, state, and regional data sources. And county and local were preferred more often because it better represents their districts. Like if it's at the local level, you know, it's more likely to be better representative. And here we asked them the importance of various factors when making legislative decisions. And again, the scale is from 1 to 5, with 5 meaning very important. And we provided them with district data, constituents, district media, or social media. And at the time of the study, social media was still a new source of information, so we included that as one of the options. And here, district data was still very important when making legislative decisions. So now switching over to specifically childhood obesity, we asked the legislators on what's their ideal format for the delivery of research findings. What format should it be in to make it most useful to you? And this was, as you can see, unprompted. And most people said electronic format, 92%, but paper format was still a preferred source or preferred format. And many offices said, you know, we like the electronic version, but maybe follow up with a paper version, or have a way to print out the electronic version in the email where we can have it if we want it. In terms of length, many people refer to just something concise, so often 1 page or 2 pages came up, so something that's short and easy to go through. And then for the presentation, they said something that's bulleted, summarized, visual. You know, they like infographics where you can just glance at the information and not have to read through all the text to get to the point. They don't have a lot of time. We went to them during session when they really didn't have that much time. So they were just like, if we can just get the information in a format where it's easy to follow, and it would be most helpful. So here we have a couple quotes. In the second one, you can see they just said it very clearly. External links aren't good. Email should have the information without having to click on any links. So that means, like, when they open the email, just all the information's in the body right there. And sometimes they would mention, you know, to have it as an attachment in case they want to print it out. And yeah, you know, email with a 1-pager with statistics or pamphlet with key facts and facts. So yeah, so this was, they like it to be very easy, very clear. They get a lot of information. Also, in response to that question, we asked, the mechanism of delivery came up. Like, how would you like it delivered? In person? You know, we would go visit their offices multiple times during session to for the survey. And, you know, would you like it in person, email? And so most people said email, as, you know, goes with the electronic format that they preferred in the previous slide. But some offices also mentioned in-person delivery. They also mentioned, like, to have it monthly or quarterly or weekly. That was only a few offices, but it did come up where it would be nice to have periodic updates on the latest research findings, just to keep, you know, to have the latest research findings that they're just in case they need them. And they do like building a relationship with, like, the source of the research information, so maybe having a follow-up meeting in case there's any questions that they had, or maybe meeting with them before a session because that's when they actually have more time to meet. So building a relationship with them and then following up during session. So follow-up meetings post-delivery was something that came up 46% of the time. Here we can see, you know, someone says, set up meetings early, talk to chiefs of staff, build relationships prior to session. So it was nice that they're very welcoming to having people come to their offices and they were willing to take their time to meet with us. We asked the legislators on who they perceive as credible messengers specific to the topic of childhood obesity, and this was also an unprompted question. And the messengers that came up the most were physicians or researchers or physicians and researchers. And that was often because it's somebody who's very familiar with the topic, they do it every day, it's usually evidence-based, and there's a couple of quotes to illustrate that. And then, you know, the other ones that came up was expert, they would just say expert, or a community or religious organization. And we also asked them, when they're reviewing legislation, what terms resonate the most? So if it's about childhood obesity, if it says childhood obesity or obesity, just a little more general, health and wellness to take away the disease aspect, healthy living, and they, 3/4 of the legislators interviewed said childhood obesity. And that was often because it specifically states what the issue is, it's compelling, you're particularly talking about children and you want to ensure that you can help children lead a healthy life while they're young. So there were some strengths and limitations to note in the study. Again, we went during session, which was a very busy time, although they were very interested in the study. So if the legislator wasn't available to help us out or participate, we would rely on legislative aides, although they are trained to answer on behalf of the legislator. And we were limited to collecting our data during session, which was limited. And some offices even had a policy where they just don't do surveys during session, so that also limited our participants. In terms of strength, there was a large interest in the study. And it was nice that we can make some changes in our protocol along the way as we were trying to collect our data. So we noticed that when we frequently visit offices, like when they say come back, and we actually do come back, and then, you know, they might be busy at that time, but then they say come back again tomorrow, and we come back, like that was the way to get, you know, to work around their schedules and allow them to participate, which is what they wanted to do. And then we would often move on to the next office. So, some final notes on effective communication. Preferred testimony is something that's a personal story by somebody who's experienced that issue at hand. In terms of credible messengers on childhood obesity, physicians and researchers were the most noted by legislators. And for the data source, they liked local level data from a large nonprofit entity. And that was, for example, Texas universities came up. And for the presentation of the data, they liked infographics, something that's concise, and electronic and paper format. So a lot of offices are still attached to that paper format. And in delivering the information, they liked the information before a session, when they actually have time to review it and to, you know, contact us in case they have any questions. And they did like for us to be following up, often in person rather than email or on the phone. So let's bring it all together here. Here's an example of a resource where kind of outlines everything that, or some of the things that we talked about today. As you can see, it's already engaging. You know, the colors are nice, it's not all text, there's some graphics in there, it makes you wanna, your eyes jump around and see what's going on that information sheet. And this is from one of our partner organizations. So at the top, that would be like an infographic where it's yellow, and then the bottom where there's a bar chart with the percents in the bar chart, that's also an infographic. And then there's little summaries. This is a two-page document, so I'm just showing you page 1 of 2. And you see the source is a reputable source in the upper right-hand corner right there. On the back of the sheet, which isn't shown, There are more infographics and also contact information for the partner for that organization up there, in case you know you would want to receive more information or see what the latest materials that they have to share are. So just to note, a couple of presentations that were here that are related to the same study are Dr. Lee's earlier today and Dr. Deanna Helscher's, which was a couple days ago. And thank you very much for your time.
All right, thank you to all the presenters. I'll just serve as moderator since we don't have one for the session. If anybody has any questions, you can ask them now, and I'll ask the speakers to answer the question at the microphone since the session is being recorded. Are there any questions for any of the speakers today? Yes, in the back.
Yeah, one question and one comment. Was there an additional assessment of how the legislators have voted in the past, and whether they actually, like, their votes for equity-related legislation has coincided with more of a health perspective than, like, an industry perspective? And then the comment is that I noticed, like, which I think is important on that handout, is, like, the first two things are something that they'd be most interested in: money. So if you'd like to grab attention like that, I think that was great. It's like economic health or whatever health, economic health, and then dollar amounts.
Right. Yes, that was something that was noted in one of the other presentations, was just that funding aspect. It's very important for the financials of whatever policy change or idea to be presented. To answer your first question, we did have a 50% turnover in legislators. So that was what instigated this survey, because in the past, between the years of 2001 to 2009, about 25% of the policies presented for change in obesity were passed. So that was a pretty good number, 25%. But then when there's a 50% turnover, you know, we were a little concerned about the policies that were in place. We don't know much about these new legislators. Sometimes they're very, you know, they're very new. So that was actually one of the reasons that we wanted to do the study, was to see what are you interested in, and how can we present information to make it useful to you if this is something that you're interested in.
Did you separate the analysis at all by new legislators versus the old ones?
Yes, we did. We did. Yes, we did. Yeah. Any other questions?
You mentioned that one of the limitations was that legislative aides answered the survey. Mm-hmm. What percentage of actual legislators answered?
It was mostly legislative aides, but they are trained to answer as a legislator would. So when we go through the consent form with them, that's one of the things that we mentioned there. It's like, this is you disclosing on behalf of the legislator. And it was most often chiefs of staff. I think every time it was chiefs of staff, if it wasn't the legislator themselves. I think, you know, it came up when we would ask them who they turned to. Sometimes they did mention some local organizations, like Texas Medical Association, like we refer to them. And it was interesting, a lot of the offices, they have their different sources, you know. So it did come up in the unprompted responses where they would describe that. What was your other, did I answer?
Well, I guess one other question is, so it sounds like the group they really liked hearing from.
Right.
And today, it seems like the people they trust a little bit more in terms of research are the researchers or other expert physicians. So I'm trying to figure out how to kind of reconcile those two things. And if I want to get some information to a legislator, is that one pager that introduces the issue of highlighting someone's personal story and then gets into the evidence supporting the physician? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the testimony they want to be from the person who's experienced the issue. So that's something that they do in front of all the other legislators, and they want that to be a compelling, I guess they view that as more compelling than if there's an expert listing out the statistics that some people may know, some people might not know already. So in terms of testimony, they wanted the personal anecdotal story. But overall, evidence-based from large research institutions, for in terms of the facts, that's what to support the testimony. And vice versa, the testimony is from time.
It's kind of like an input-output kind of thing. Input, they want the stats, they want the data, they want that evidence-based information. But in terms of output, to try to get the rest of their legislators on board, they want those affect, compelling stories.
Did you ask any questions or get any sort of sense of, like, was the data more important or was the personal testimony more important? Because, like, I guess you asked, like, where do you want your data to come from, and it said those folks, but, like, what ended up influencing legislation the most, like the personal testimony or the data? Did you look at that at all?
I think that refers to one of the questions where we asked them various factors. When you're deciding on legislation, and one of the responses it was like constituents, and the other one was local level data, district data, and district data. They were close. Those were actually the two most, you know, the two higher ones. But those were the two. District data still was a little higher than constituents, and that was a funny one because when they're responding, they were like, "It's data. You know, they care about the data."
So they mentioned, like, the example that we had was the SNAP-related policy. So there were some policy recommendations that were presented to them that wanted to take away access to certain foods. Like, you couldn't buy, example, like sodas with using SNAP or something like that. And so they didn't want to take away what they could use SNAP to buy. They wanted to offer them more, like, the healthier foods. I don't know specifically, do you?
Yeah, I think it was like incentive. Probably programs where they, like community, maybe farm to work programs, like offering more. I don't know if that answers the question though. Something
that's the double dollar versus.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Any other questions? All right. Thank you guys. Have a good trip home.